Word of mouth.
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 This is Word of Mouth from New Hampshire Public Radio. I'm Taylor Quimby, sitting in for Virginia Prescott. It's been a rough couple of months for spaceflight. On October 28th, an unmanned rocket loaded with 5,000 pounds of supplies for the International Space Station exploded just after launch. And 3 days later, one of Virgin Galactic's suborbital planes broke up in flight, crashed in the Mojave Desert, and killed one pilot, severely injured another. These traumatic mechanical failures offer a look into why space tourism may be further away than we think. But even if they can be overcome, what about the psychological effects of reaching outer space? Sydney Brownstone is a staff writer at Fast Company's Coexist, where she wrote about the often ignored mental side of space travel. And Sydney, welcome to Word of Mouth.
Hi, Taylor. Thank you for having me.
Of course. So, Sydney, it's worth pointing out that you're not really writing about the mental pressures on people who would, say, travel to Mars and maybe be on a spaceship for years at a time. You're looking at the side effects experienced by pilots who are flying suborbitally. That's at very high altitude. So tell us a little bit about the phenomenon that you describe, this break-off phenomenon.
Right. Well, I think it'll be helpful to contextualize the break-off phenomenon in another type of syndrome I stumbled across called the overview effect. This is a syndrome or an experience that, the CEO of Virgin Galactic, George Whitesides, is invested in. There's something called the Overview Institute. Basically, it's this idea that when you pay for space travel, anyone can go up and have this really beautiful epiphany about the fragility of the Earth and the unity of humankind. And it's supposed to be incredibly emotional and intense.
Positive way.
In a very positive way. This is one of the selling points. Some space tourism companies actually use it in their marketing materials. So I knew about this overview effect, and when I started interrogating it a little bit and going through the medical literature, I came across another kind of parallel syndrome called the break-off phenomenon. And this is something that was first reported in 1957 in a paper that interviewed 137 fighter pilots. And this is a term they came up with themselves, the break-off phenomenon. It was this feeling of when they would get up to high altitudes, of feeling dissociated or separated from the Earth. And dissociation is not a term to be taken lightly. It's a very, very, it can be a very scary feeling.
This is sort of what the out-of-body experience.
Right. And the weird thing about the break-off phenomenon, too, is that it wasn't always positive and it wasn't always negative. So two-thirds of the pilots who did describe break-off described it as something calm and peaceful. A few felt closer to God. And then there were about a third of the pilots said they freaked out, basically.
Yeah. Well, how does the break-off effect manifest physically? I mean, we're talking psychologically about people, you know, feeling very calm or feeling closer to God. But what is happening to their bodies?
It's hard to say. A lot of people report a variety of effects. In the medical literature, I found one case of a squadron commander who was hyperventilating and basically displaying the symptoms of a panic attack or several panic attacks. He would get this tightness in his chest. He would lash out at his coworkers. And those kind of all seemed like symptoms he developed after experiencing the break-off phenomenon. But I think that the main symptom is this feeling of dissociation. You feel separated from the Earth, which if you think about it, can be a really positive thing. Oh, I feel free. I feel surreal. And then it can also feel extremely unsettling.
And what happens when this occurs? I mean, they're experiencing something, but how does that affect their ability to fly?
There have been a lot of different conclusions. When we first started flying astronauts and cosmonauts, NASA and the Russian Academy of Sciences, they were very concerned about break-off happening to astronauts and ruining missions. But some researchers concluded that it just wasn't a big deal and it didn't affect someone's ability to fly. On the other hand, we have this other term called spatial disorientation, and break-off is kind of one symptom in a constellation of weird things that can happen to you when you're flying, and it does cause pilot error, and quite a few people have died because of it.
Now, does it seem like there's a pattern of maybe who experiences break off?
Well, the very early researchers made a few connections, and they're a little bit hazy. But if you had a history of mental illness, if you were just having a rough time on Earth, basically, you were more likely to experience the negative effects of breakoff. And one researcher I spoke to who was working on an Air Force base in the 80s and 90s worked with pilots very closely who didn't really want to tell her about breakoff and didn't want to tell her about their feelings at first. But when they opened up, they told her that some of the traumas and stresses they experienced on Earth would become magnified in flight. For example, a pilot who recently lost his son and his wife was flying, and he heard their voices. When he heard their voices, he realized that he was spiraling into a dive. He had made a very dangerous mistake, and he was able to pull himself out of it, but this is something that rattled him. And, you know, I think a lot of people have different experiences based on, I don't know, just their personalities, their experiences, the things that occupy their minds.
I'm speaking with Fast Company's Sydney Brownstone about the influence of space travel on mental health, specifically a phenomenon referred to as the breakoff effect. Now, you mentioned in your article that this phenomenon seems to have disappeared from the literature anyway in the 70s. Was it so hard to pin down? Partially, you mentioned that pilots are skeptical to talk to psychiatrists. Is that part of the issue?
It's hard. It's hard to pin down. There's definitely something called the lie to fly culture, which is the idea that if you're a pilot or you're an astronaut, you don't want to say anything to your flight surgeon that's going to ground you and ruin your career. If you say, well, I was flying at 70,000 feet in a U-2 spy plane, and I thought I heard the voice of my dead son, you know, the flight surgeon might think that you're not able to do your job. If you go into space because of G-forces or because of the ergonomics of the ship, or, you know, just how our bodies are built, astronauts will puke. This is something that space tourists will almost certainly experience too. A lot of space tourists will throw up for certain. But astronauts didn't want to show this to their flight surgeons for a very long time, so they tried to hide the fact that they were throwing up in space. So the fact that this disappeared in the 70s could be in part due to lie to fly culture. You know, as the space shuttle program was ramping up, NASA didn't want to cast the idea of an astronaut as someone who was vulnerable.
Well, I suppose the difference for space tourism is that you might be paying $250,000 to throw up in space. But astronauts, you know, they do go through these rigorous physical and mental tests to be able to determine whether or not they're fit for space travel. What about civilians who may pay in the future to go on these suborbital flights? Are they going to be tested in the same ways?
It's hard to tell because there's nothing really regulating this type of activity at the moment. But I did get the opportunity to visit a space training center called NASTAR, which has trained the first Virgin Galactic and X-Corps space tourists. And what they offer is a two-day training program to acclimate a person to G-forces. These are the acceleration forces that a person will feel both vertically and horizontally as they're going to space. So no, they are not subject to the same type of rigorous, you know, psychological, physical testing as astronauts were. And it's a completely different culture, too, because now, or presumably in the next couple of years, anyone who can afford space travel can go up. A lot of the selling points for these companies are, you know, you don't need to have a specialized background. We'll take you. We're making that available to you.
Well, does that seem okay to you, given that these are people that aren't going to be behind the controls? So maybe they can experience the breakoff phenomenon, but it won't be devastating because there's no chance that they'll spiral downwards and crash the plane.
Given the reporting that I've done, I do have concerns about this attitude being kind of cavalier and not communicating the fullness of the experience to these space tourists. Because if you're selling the overview effect, you're selling one kind of experience. It's going to be positive. It's going to be an epiphany. You're going to realize all these things about the Earth and your duty to protect it. It's got kind of this manifest destiny environmentalist slant to it, which you would think is positive, but without communicating the fact that you might go up there and your traumas or stresses might be magnified. I think it's important to say that there's a range of experiences a person could have, and we should be open to that and take it into account. And, you know, I'm no expert, but maybe a two-day training course isn't enough to prepare someone mentally for space. We're going to find out. That training center that I mentioned, NASTAR, is currently studying whether the course that they offer can actually decrease a person's anxiety.
It sounds to me like they're selling the idea that tourists can take a two-day course to prepare for the experience of taking acid.
That's exactly the conversation I've had with my editors. They're like, so this is like an acid trip, right? And I go, pretty much. And there's actually, you know, I interviewed a researcher who wrote a paper on, you know, that mentioned Breakoff, but it was about hallucinogenic experiences that don't require hallucinogenic drugs. And so much of the literature on this stuff, it uses the same language of like ritualistic hallucinogenic experiences and the ego separating from itself and becoming closer to the divine. It's very, very trippy.
Sydney, once we've got people into space, potentially in the future for very long periods of time, do you think that there are mental side effects like the Breakoff effect that we don't yet understand and that might arise as we get further and further into our efforts to explore space?
That's actually a major concern of NASA's at the moment. You know, as we get further and further away from the Earth, let's say interstellar travel, some researchers have discussed this syndrome called Earth out of view. And it's kind of like an exaggerated version of the Breakoff phenomenon. You know, as the world shrinks smaller in your rear view mirror, what will happen to you? You could think of parallels here on Earth. You could think of deep sea diving or extreme isolation for long periods of time. And there are certainly people who have done that and other people who have studied it, but I don't think we'll ever know until we actually do it and find out.
Well, Sydney, thank you so much for taking time to explain this to us. We appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you, Taylor.
Sydney Brownstone is a staff writer at Fast Company's Coexist, and you can find a link to her article on the Breakoff effect and the mental side of space travel at wordofmouthradio.org.